Hello and welcome, Trailblazers fans. Whether you're finding us on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you're using for your podcast needs, we're glad you joined us. As always, I'm joined by Blazers Edge Managing Editor Dave Deckard. I am Dan Marang. Dave, how great is it to be to come into a podcast on a nice little winning streak?
Well, I mean, it's much more fun than it is coming in on a mostly losing streak. The Blazers have won their last three. Now, remind me, when we were talking with Chad last week, who guested on the show with us, we were all talking about when are the Blazers going to win 6 of 8. You guys were saying February of 2022 or whatever it was. What did Dave say? When?
Was it the second week in December?
It was December.
It was a blanket December? Okay.
Yeah, it was December. Yeah, so far, perhaps they might make me look good.
They're halfway there.
Yeah, living on a prayer. Yeah.
I mean, you have to play your schedule. So whether or not there's been some injuries and some suspensions or whatever you want to look at, I mean, a win's still a win in the win column. So, I mean, you got to play what's out on the floor that night. And I think the Blazers are getting a... Well, the schedule itself isn't light with, you know, what essentially turns into 9 games, I think in 13 nights or 12 nights. The personnel on the floor is a little more comforting than it otherwise would be with a few injuries and a few suspensions.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Blazers have made a living off of this, and that's fine. This is not the first time that's happened. But if they've learned anything, it's when you have a chance to take a win, you take the win. And you don't ask who, you don't ask why. It's how they got to the second round of the playoffs. It's how they got such a good record last year comparatively. And hey, am I crying about it? I am not, because that will turn around at some point and some other team will get wins because of Portland injuries or other weird stuff. Doesn't matter. All that matters is the W.
Yeah, and I think it would be good on our part to mention why and what's contributed to these Blazers wins other than some of those peripheral issues. And it's centered around the Blazers gameplay, particularly, and something we've talked about ad nauseum, the Blazers defense. Now, Andre Iguodala had a quote last week talking specifically about Draymond Green and what makes him good defensively. And he said that it was all about desire. Iguodala himself being a spectacular defender throughout his career, it was an innate desire and a will to be a good defender, and that's what made a good defender. Do you buy into that theory?
Well, for the most part, I mean, look, if you're not athletic and you don't have lateral movement, nothing's going to make you into a really good perimeter defender. If you don't have size, nothing's going to make you into a great interior defender, at least height or reach, right? But as long as you've got the basics, the difference between bad defenders and good defenders is about 40% knowledge and about 40% effort. And the rest of it is, the other 20% is just that basic skill set or basic athleticism. And I think the Blazers are in general lacking in both of those 40% departments. They are young and there is hope. We've seen it with veterans, with the Blazers before, start out their career as not great defenders, end up their career adequate. So with a few years on them, that 40% might get there. The question mark 40% is the desire, but I think we've seen more desire in the last few games since they had their come to Jesus meeting, so to speak. And it looks like they committed, and look, they're not a work of art, but it's better.
Yes, yeah, certainly. I mean, it's been across the board. As we're recording this now, we know we just finished with a Bulls game, and I think this is the third game in a row where I've seen Damian Lillard hit the floor for a loose ball. And it's not just that one play, but I think that kind of epitomizes the play that was lacking in the first 18 or so games. And when you see the top guy on the team hitting the floor and making a play when you need to, Maurice Harkless has been spectacular in that facet. I've talked about him in post-game analysis, you know, being there at the right time in the right place. And a lot of that is basketball IQ and knowing when to be there. But the other part of that is the effort and the energy and the hustle. You have to have want to get to that spot to beat the opponent there. And I don't think that was there early on. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that. And coupled with the Blazers offense, even with these teams that they're playing against were healthy or not missing people, you would see a more successful version of the Blazers than we had seen in the past.
Yeah, and they don't look as much like they're coasting on that end. They don't look as much as if they're expecting someone else to pick up the slack. And we talked about both of those things. And I think they realize that, yes, they really do want to win, that it's not good enough to just exceed expectations. It's not good enough to be a dark horse or, you know, a closet favorite. They actually want to do something. I believe wholeheartedly that Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum want to make their mark in this league, and it looks like, at least for the last couple games, they've decided to make the play on the court match that desire.
Now, I was just talking about a guy on Maurice Harkless, and we've debated and we've talked about, as the season's progressed, who's going to step up and be that third guy. And it's been debated whether it's Minu, whether it's Crabb, whether it could be Turner. Harkless was seen as a dark horse. Have you seen enough of Maurice Harkless now to say that, yes, he's that guy? Do you need to see more? If so, what are you looking for?
Well, I mean, right now he is. I don't know if he'll stay that way the whole season, but there's no question, and we talked about this last week too. Mo Harkless gives offense when it's needed. He gives effort all the time. He's had a few good defensive stands. There's nothing wrong with Mo right now. I mean, and you cannot say that about any other trailblazer, even the guards. The defense is often wrong with them. But Mo Harkless, it's not that Mo's a superstar, but basically ain't nothing wrong with him, and let's hope it stays that way.
Yeah, I think when you're getting with Harkless, and what's crazy to think about, as this has kind of come out, that Damian pushed for to bring Harkless back, you can see why. He's become, I think, a bit more than a glue guy in that he's making the play that somebody has to make every single game. And I think Blazers PR put out a stat that he's now put up double digits in 10 straight games, which is something he hadn't done before. So he's scoring efficiently or effectively, and you put that together with the fact that he's always putting out the effort and playing defense, and the fact that he meshes so well with these two guys up front in Lillard and McCollum, then think that you got him for $10 million. That's a pretty decent deal. If he works out to be that third guy that ends up being your fourth guy, then I think the Blazers really, really are onto something.
And there's no reason that he can't. Again, the question with him is, can he and Aminu keep playing big minutes together? Not that they overlap entirely, but their profile kind of overlaps. And I don't know if the Blazers can field two guys like that, but for right now, hey, no question that he definitely belongs on the team. He definitely belongs getting the minutes, and he's the one guy who you kind of pin your hopes on in terms of, or I better say, you hang your coat on that hook. Not that it's going to carry you, but he has been the bright spot in an otherwise dicey start to the season.
Speaking of dicey, Evan Turner is often been a point of contention early on
this season. He's been better. He's been better, hasn't he?
Last
you get David McKay. Shout out to David McKay all over Twitter telling people like 6 games ago, this guy's getting better. Look, this guy's getting better. He's getting better. And sure enough, he's getting better. What do you see, Dan?
Personally, I've said it before, I don't think he's ever going to be a great fit on this team. But I think he's doing what he needs to do to be a successful part of this team now. Particularly the relationship that he's developing with Myers Leonard is one that I didn't see coming. And some people will point to his relationship between Kelly Olynyk and Tyler Zeller and Myers Leonard. And I guess I can see that in that Zeller and Olynyk can both spot up and knock down a shot. But they're different players than Leonard really is. Leonard is almost entirely a pick and pop type player, whereas Olynyk and Zeller are both role men. But they're developing a nice little two-man game there where even if defenders are going under the screen on Turner, it's creating more space on the back end when somebody does drive and penetrate off of that screen. So the dynamic that you would expect to be there typically between that kind of relationship with a ball handler and big is tweaked a little bit because of the floor balance, and that is really based on the emergence of somebody else that we've talked about in Allen Crabb, which we'll get to here in a little bit. But he's been very good in the situations he's been put in. Speaking of David McKay, I believe he put out a stat where Turner had 18 turnovers in the first six games, and over the last 13 games, he's had six, something around that. It's a staggering turnaround. That's, I think, born out of familiarity. And while I don't think Turner's going to reach the playmaking numbers and the comfort level that he did in Boston anytime this season, it's certainly going to bode well for Portland going forward.
So let me check. I just want to make sure I heard what I heard. Are you saying the Blazers have actually got some synergy going?
Yeah, no, it's kind of crazy. I mean, you would think that this would have been there out of the gate, but I think this may go back to something you alluded to early on. I believe it was in the preseason, talking about expectations. You know, are they still going to be hungry enough to come out and claim what is theirs as opposed to sneaking up on opponents on a nightly basis? And that may have been an awakening call that they had early on.
Yeah, although, to be fair, I mean, the win against Indiana was convincing, and that's great. Indiana was really hurt. Miami's no good. The Blazers beat them by 7. Chicago is a road win. That's quality. Won it by 2. Tried to give it up at the end. It's not like they're making a, it's not like they have a mandate, to speak in political terms. They haven't earned that yet. They're winning via electoral college at this point. Let's hope that the popular vote comes around as well and justifies them. But hey, again, 4 out of 5 right now. They've won their last 4 out of 5. The Houston loss was embarrassing. That's, we went through that last time. But otherwise, you know, some relatively decent wins. We'll take it. What else we got?
Yeah, you know, speaking of those games, I think most people, and I say that loosely, would rather have this team play the way they've been playing recently, giving up some of the scoring output and putting more emphasis on the defensive side of the ball. I think, at number one, it makes for a more competitive game, as we've seen. And I think it's more of a pleasing style of play when you actually see effort on that side of the floor. So I think that's kind of played part of why fans are more excited about this team lately, in not just the wins, but the product on both ends. And I think one of the reasons for that, though, has been something we just alluded to, in Alan Crabb, who's come from, you know, relative obscurity this season, where he couldn't find anything, to knocking down next to everything over the last couple games.
Gosh, when Alan Crabb and Evan Turner play well together, the Blazers prosper? Who would have thought that would happen?
Yeah, it's a little bit nuts, and I think you can kind of take this as a whole right now, and then we can go more into Crabb, in that the Blazers' bench isn't giving up just giant chunks of points. In fact, they've been pushing leads out. I mean, how do you go from being, and this has kind of been, again, Evan Turner's going to be the butt of this joke, of having the worst plus minus in the league to being effective? Can you attribute all of that to just cohesion within the team?
With Turner, I think so, because Turner's a veteran. Turner knows how to play. But look, new team, actually the chemistry and the flow that the Blazers are semi-famous for anyway may be working against him, because he was the odd guy out. He's a guy who likes the ball in his hands, as we said over and over again, but he likes the ball in his hands. He's used to doing things with it the Blazers didn't do. And I really think it takes a month or two to settle in, to get even close to your potential. Now, Turner was way, way below his, but even pulling even is pretty good for him, and he'll be an asset to the Blazers if he can do that. Is he a keeper forever and ever? Amen. I don't see that happening, but, well, it may see that happening because of his contract, but I don't see that happening ideally. But look, a C plus contribution from Evan Turner is something the Blazers will take right now.
Now, particularly as it pertains to Crabb, do you think his sudden return to form is more Crabb being comfortable, or is it more him being comfortable with Turner, a combination of the two, or is it just the normal ebb and flow of a season?
It's always hard to tell. Ebb and flow of the season should always be underlined, because that's the most simple explanation. Crap happens, and Crabb started slow. That said, I perceive Crabb's slow start as more internal, whereas Turner's was more external. I don't think Turner was sitting there doubting himself or doubting his style of play. I just think he was the new kid on the block. I think Crabbe came in with a lot of changes this year. Evan Turner was one of them. The free agency period not going to Brooklyn was another one. Huge contract was another one. The emergence of McCollum and Lillard, obviously that happened last year, but I mean, this year that was like set in stone. So Crabbe is not, I mean, last year, even when CJ was developing, sure, CJ did great, but there was room for Crabbe. He could have been like the third guard clearly and started encroaching on CJ territory. That didn't entirely happen. It did in some ways, but he was a clear distant third. And this year he comes in as a clear distant third, and there's not as much space in front of him. I think probably all of that took some adjusting to. And look, it wasn't a priority for this team to get him going. And I don't think he knew where to make space for himself. And I think in some ways he was thinking, should I take this shot? Is this my play? Now, fortunately, he seems to have gotten over some of that. Maybe he's learned the lesson that every shot is your play, baby, because you're a good offensive player. Take as much pride in your game as CJ and Dame take in theirs, just with limited minutes. And he seems to have gotten on track with that.
I mean, it's safe to say it's a safe assumption that Crabbe was paid because he can shoot, right?
Well, not just because he can shoot, but because that mid-range scoring game to long-range scoring game. He's baby CJ in a way, without the ball handling, but with the ability to pull up from just about anywhere on the floor and look credible. And look, the Blazers don't overvalue or haven't overvalued the mid-range game, but that's been changing. And I think McCollum has been part of that. I think Lillard getting inside is part of that. So they need someone to balance out the floor. And I think Crabbe fits that bill. Obviously, they have a huge need for bench scoring too. So there is room for Allen Crabbe. It's just not the wide open space that maybe a young guy like that would need in order to completely flourish.
Okay, so we've seen the Blazers turn the screws a little bit, apply a little more defensive pressure. They're winning the rebound battle or getting close in that area. They're taking better care of the ball. The bench isn't giving up leads. But these games are still tight against teams that are depleted. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because a lot of teams have as much talent as the Blazers do. Not in the starting backcourt, but after you get out of the starting backcourt, for all the people are happy about the potential and the smart basketball analyst contributions of the rest of the roster, they're just not remarkable in any way, shape, or form. If you took the starting guards off of this team, you would be, I'm not sure you'd be Philadelphia exactly, but you'd have less potential than Philadelphia by a long, long shot. And 3 years from now, you'd be going, you know, I don't know. So look, everybody else at three positions is going to out-talent you. The Blazers are not cohesive yet on the floor. That's just going to lead to a lot of nail-biting wins and significant losses.
Well, when you're looking at how the team itself breaks down, are you hopeful for this year and for the future, for this current roster, or as far as growth opportunities throughout this season, or do you think that this team is kind of what it is now?
No, of course there are growth opportunities. The question is, can you match up growth potential with the opportunity? I think Allen Crabbe has a big ceiling, or at least more than we see. I think CJ McCollum also has ceiling up that he's never going to reach when playing with Damian Lillard. But that backcourt's really tight now. There's not a ton of space for those guys to grow. Where is there a ton of space? Well, especially at the big positions, right? Power forward, center, anybody who was amazing would immediately stand out there. But the Blazers have nobody who's amazing at those positions. So they need to maybe, you know, this is where the trade talk comes in. Can you get a guy with potential in the front court to balance out all these guys who are pretty good and will do yeoman's work, but they need a captain up there, not just a yeoman.
When you're looking at the Blazers front court right now, clearly, over the last 2 weeks, there's been an improvement. If you had to grade them right now over the last couple of weeks of play, where would you put them?
For just the last couple of weeks?
Just the last couple of weeks. Let's say the last 2 weeks of play.
All right. So we're talking about basically we want to go around or after the Cleveland loss?
Yep.
All right. Because, yeah, that Cleveland, the end of that road trip was pretty pathetic. In fact, that entire road trip was pretty pathetic. But after that, if you're looking at post-road trip, obviously they've won 4 or 5. Obviously the defense has been better. Rebounding, I think, has helped that considerably. So I would give them, for the Blazers, a B, maybe a B plus if you just narrow it down, especially to the last 5 games. That said, a Portland B plus would be, you know, we're in disaster territory for teams that have a good front court. So that's kind of got an asterisk with it.
Yeah, I think we're looking at, we've seen growth from nearly all 3 of the Blazer big contributors in Davis, Plumlee, and Leonard. Leonard has been getting more consistent run. His shooting's still down a little bit, but he's been a little bit more effective. Plumlee has been huge so far as rebounding and assists, and actually scoring. I mean, even against Chicago tonight early on, the Blazers are feeding Plumlee in the post against Robin Lopez, which is something I never thought I'd see featured in more than one set. Ed Davis is returning to be, you know, more Ed Davis-like. Rebounding, playing defense, making the hustle plays that really weren't there. And I think that's helped shore up a lot of the issues that Portland has had. And I think I'm kind of with you as far as if we're grading him, I'd probably grade him on a tougher curve. I'd say probably more C plus to B minus. I still think that there's more that they can give. And I think it's probably slanted because of my view of Myers a little bit. I think he still has a lot more to give this team. But how they've played and how that's transitioned down to the front court as well, I think it's helped alleviate some of the concerns that were there early on. But you alluded to a trade possibility with the
Let me ask you this. Can I actually interrupt you for a second? Because we just played Chicago, okay? And one of the things Phil Nasons and I talked about like a year or two ago, there's a front court guy who I used to really want, and I think I might still kind of want him, and he plays for Chicago.
I already know where you're going with this.
You know where I'm going with this, huh? Where am I going with it?
Old Nick.
Yes, St. Nick.
I think we have a difference of opinion on St. Nick.
All right, tell me why you don't like St. Nick coming down your chimney and living in your Blazers stocking.
To me, he's one of those. He's window dressing. He's one of those guys that looks really nice on paper from time to time. How he actually translates into the game, I don't. To me, something about him just doesn't ring true to me. I know some of the advanced analytics on him are actually pretty favorable defensively, but I look at him and I see feet that look like they should move pretty well on defensive end that are a step or two behind. I see an outside shot that's inconsistent. Honestly, when I look at him, I see a Minu with a cleaner shot and not quite the same defensive acumen.
I might take that, though. I mean, I did not quite the same defensive acumen, I think, as being charitable. I mean, Mirotić is not at Aminu's level defensively, period. But and look, you did 37% from the field, 28% from the three point arc this season. It's like he's already playing for the Blazers. But still, okay. So the guy's 6'10". He's 25 years old, only had 3 seasons in the NBA. And I think that he's a guy who could be more than window dressing for Portland. That given the right circumstance, and the right circumstance is a buffet of shots in front of him, permission to shoot the three-pointer, and the ability to play in a multifaceted offensive lineup, I think he'd look good in a Blazers uniform.
I can see how, if all the stars aligned and he found his game again, how it would make sense. The thing that I look at is, what do you, as if you're Neil O'Shea, what do you pick up and offer to Gar Pax in Chicago that they don't hang up the phone and you don't overpay?
Well, what if they don't like him? I mean, they're not using him any more this year than they ever have. And there's frustration mounting. Look, do they have a ton of options in the front court? They do not. But it could be at some point that they're willing to, I mean, not necessarily deal him cheap, but they might want to look for, I don't know. Would you go Harkless? Would you go Aminu? Ed Davis? Myers Leonard? You know?
See, although, the one to me that makes sense is that
Leonard is Meritage different. But anyway, go ahead.
But no, I think you're on to something. I think Harkless and Aminu are too far and above as far as value. I don't think the Blazers would get enough out of that one-for-one swap. Personally, I could see where a player like Ed Davis would fit perfectly with that team just because of the way that they're structured. Mm-hmm. I believe Gibson has 1 year left. I'm not 100% certain. It's either one or two. I can't remember when he signed his deal. Yeah. But if his contract's coming off the books, they need a power forward to kind of fill that role. And I can see Ed Davis being that kind of guy. The problem is Chicago is really bereft of shooting. So I think it'd have to be somebody that can knock down a shot, which makes me believe that Myers would have to be the guy in that deal. And I don't know if I would give up Myers for Mirotić. I just, that's that to me, maybe it's my own personal bias, but I don't know if Portland gets enough in that kind of deal.
Yeah, I mean, it would depend on their assessment of Myers. And I would think there's a possibility that their assessment of Myers is quietly what Chicago's assessment of Mirotić would be if Chicago were going to trade Mirotić. Like the guy, like the potential, think he could fit. He's, you know, in first gear in mud here, and the gears are grinding. So I could see potential there, but I agree that seeing clear potential for a step forward is harder. I think Chicago would have to go with a stylistic shift in order to value what Portland has, and Portland would be making the trade not necessarily for talent, but to get a different style in the front court. You know, even if Chicago get Ed Davis, now they get Ed Davis and Robin Lopez in the front court. That's big, that's interior, but is that effective, especially with all those guards liking to score inside the three-point arc?
And that was really the discussion heading into this season with Chicago, was how are they going to balance the floor with three guys that really can't hit threes? So
it would be awesome if they just said, screw it. We're going
all in.
Which
is kind of what they've done.
We're quintupling down. Get Mirotić out of here. Give us Ed Davis, and just you can hang out beyond the arc. Everything inside it belongs to us.
I mean, Mirotić really didn't do anything tonight for the Bulls that was otherworldly. Meanwhile, Dwayne Wade, you know, drops what, 34.
He's not doing anything otherworldly except shooting otherworldly bad right now. I mean, he's just not performing for them. Whatever the experiment is, isn't working. And the question is that because of play style, chemistry, and trust, or is that because Mirotić really just isn't that good?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it has the potential to be more than a lateral move if, like I said, all the stars align. But at worst, I think it would be a lateral plus move, simply because it would balance out the roster a little bit more. The term plotter kind of comes to mind when I think of Portland's bigs, and that's no way a slight at them and their athleticism. They're not guys that you can put out on the perimeter in any shape, manner, or facet and be totally comfortable. Mirotić is a guy who, if you're putting him out there offensively or defensively on the perimeter, you're comfortable. You're not sitting there going, oh, geez, not again. Now, his defense could drop to that, but it would make more sense on the balance side.
Ask me if I want to see Dame and CJ driving down the lane and tossing over there to Mirotić instead of Aminu, tossing to him around the three-point arc. I don't care what the percentages say. My answer to that is yes.
Yeah, I mean, really, it would allow for some really stylistically different lineups to where Portland can put five shooters on the floor where the fifth guy is Myers. I mean, you almost can't get away from it otherwise. Turner's not consistent enough. You can go super small with Lillard, Crabbe, and McCollum. With, I mean, arguably, you can throw Harkless out there, but if you throw Aminu out there, you've got some of the inconsistency, whereas you throw Myers out there, you have more potential. Now, if you threw Mirotić out there instead, you've got a three-point lineup that could really, really wreck some team spacing.
I wonder what would happen if you did something like, I don't know how this would ever play out with Chicago, But what if you field a lineup of Lillard, McCollum, Aminu back at small forward, Mirotić, and Leonard?
It'd be an interesting lineup. I mean, if Mirotić was at least a neutral defender and Myers held down the paint with Aminu able to switch up front, you'd have spacing everywhere. And defensively, you'd be probably okay.
Yeah, you know, look, because Myers has said, I want to vary my game a little bit more. I don't want to just be the three-point guy. And by the way, I can defend in the paint too, but they're not asking me to do this. Well, okay, Mirotić wants to be at the three-point arc way more than Myers does, so he's that guy out there. Myers can be inside when he wants, but can also come out and screen, roll, or pick and pop, can clear the lane and space the floor if the guards drive. I mean, there's potential there that the Blazers just do not have in any combination right now.
Yeah, it's something we've talked about in roster balance and lineup kind of, and that's why we always get back at some point talking about a consolidation trade or a move to balance things out. And I could see this kind of move. This has kind of been a Neil Olshay, this kind of has Neil Olshay move written on it, doesn't it? It's one of those things where it makes sense because nobody's really talking about it. Stylistically, it fits, although the Evan Turner signing wasn't something that anybody saw stylistically fitting, but it's one of those things where it's so weird and kind of wacky that it has a real possibility of coming true.
Yeah, nobody's really talking about it but us, which means 4 weeks from now, somebody else is going to say they invented it. But that's all right. You heard it here first.
It'll be a fake news site.
Yes, aren't they all? Except us. Anyway, what else you got, Dan?
You know, when we're looking forward over this, this is kind of the NBA as a whole, and I kind of want to get your take on this, particularly as it pertains to the Blazers. Geographically, Portland is so out there without Seattle and without Vancouver that we look at these road trips and, you know, 5 games and 7 nights. They essentially play, and I know Tim's talked about this, in that it's essentially a 9-game road trip. They come home, they play a 5-game trip, come home for one, then go back out for three. And with the CBA coming up, do you think that the added days to this will help alleviate some of these stresses and these issues? And do you think it'll play that much of a difference in the style of play and how Portland in particular has to deal with these kind of things?
Well, I'm not sure it affects style of play. I do know a few things. Okay. First of all, nobody likes preseason. I mean, just nobody. Second of all, they're not getting enough rest. They have to scheme to get enough sleep and downtime for these guys. Third, injuries are no good for anyone, and repetitive, frequent stress. You know, who knows if there's a one-to-one correlation, but it can't help, right? And fourth, the NBA doesn't have any interest in seeing bench players play any more minutes than they have to. They don't give a rip about 12 deep. They want stars and they want starting fives out there. And for all these reasons, let alone Portland's geographical remoteness and the league spread basically across two coasts, I think it makes sense to lengthen out the season and to make sure that these guys get the chance to not just travel in style, but travel at a reasonable pace.
My hope is that they get away from back-to-backs entirely. I don't know if that'll happen. The discussion, I think, always then centers around, do you want a 9-month-long NBA season?
You already have it if you're a preseason watcher. I mean, and this is why they're not actually borrowing any time that they're not technically spending anyway. And I don't think, look, it's not like the masses are rushing to watch the NBA on October 27th anyway. Past opening night, I think it kind of levels out. And I think that will always be true. It's a post-Christmas league. It's a spring league. You know, Christmas Day, spring playoff races and spring playoffs, that's when people pay attention. So I don't think that they're going to lose any of their diehards by starting 10 days earlier. It's going to be the same for them. I don't think they're going to gain any casual watchers or lose any, because those casual watchers just aren't going to be there either way you go.
All right, so we got 4 games left on this road trip. What are your points to watch? What are you hoping to see? What are the takeaways that you're hoping to get out of this?
Well, obviously I want two more wins in the next three so that my prediction comes true. That would be this would be a Phil Nason's moment. Yeah, well, hey, you know, it never hurts to look good. So, of course, and the Blazers only exist to make me look good, right? So
this is true. It's written into your contract.
It's written in my contract, yes. They must make me look right. Look, what do I want to see? It has little to do with wins and losses. It just, I don't care about wins and losses at this point. Obviously, they're nice, but I don't think even winning three in a row is going to mean the Blazers turned it around, and the record won't look that good. I want to see them not suck. I want to see them defend and rebound. I don't care at this point. I've seen their offense. I know what they can do offensively. I know that that's never going to go away for too long. I want to see their rebounding be as sure as it was last year, and let's stop messing around with that because that's freaking ridiculous. You know, I have kids. There are things your kids do wrong that just, they make you mad, but you understand this is a one-off thing. But then there are things your kids do wrong, and you go, that is freaking ridiculous. You're the last person in the world who should be doing that. Rebounding and the Blazers, that's that thing. That's the thing that makes you really angry. So I want to see them rebound, first of all, if nothing else. I don't care. Offense, defense, rebound the ball. I want to see their defense look better. And, you know, the bench continue to play reasonably well, at least not bumble their way through things. And then I think everything else will take care of themselves. Now, did I expect them to win three of the next four games? I do not. But I think there's no doubt they can win at least one. And if they win two, it's good. And anything more than two is fantastic.
You know, when I look at this team, and it's something we talked about with Chad doing last week, in that if this team plays even mediocre level defense and just tightens the screws on a few things, and that's whether it be fast break points or points off turnovers. And I think fast break points has been huge lately, specifically when you're talking about a guy like Maurice Harkless, that their offense is good enough to carry them to wins. And I think you're right in the essence that wins and losses, while they do matter, they don't necessarily matter the most right now, where this team isn't going to go to the NBA Finals. If it did, it would be a Disney movie, you know, within a week.
Bite your tongue.
I mean, it's just one of those things where it's a league that's driven by stars, and I don't think Portland has that star power yet, and I don't think it's any stretch to say so. But if you're going to have building blocks, for me, and this is something that would trigger the run last year, you know, in February, where the Blazers' defense was okay, but it was all the little things. And it was something that I was harping on a ton, in that they were getting out and pushing pace and tempo. While you see Coach Stotts always on the sideline yelling, go, 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 there are times when CJ and Damian, they go, but they don't really go. And I think over the last couple of games, you've seen a focused effort to get the ball up court. Maurice Harkless and Mason Plumlee have been phenomenal on the break lately in getting out and getting easy buckets, getting basically free points just by running the floor. So I'd like to see that continue, and I'd like to see them continue to put pressure on teams defensively. And I know analytically steals is not something that ever truly links to success, but I think it's something that a team feeds on, and not just the easy points, but just from a mentality aspect of getting after it and driving, you know, an opponent crazy. And I think that's something that's huge.
Are you saying, Dan, that you want young athletic team to run?
The young athletic team?
Yeah. Well, if they're young, I mean, look, we got four games at the end of this road trip. By the way, then you come home, play the Thunder, and go out on another one. So it's like, it's kind of like they're on a 10-game road trip. But if they're young, let's put them back in school. So you got Milwaukee coming up on Wednesday. That's kind of like a schoolyard bully fight. Not exactly with the biggest guy, but, you know, there's someone at the corner waiting for you, and you got to scrap with them, and Milwaukee's going to be tough. Memphis, the day after, I think the Blazers can handle Memphis, but that's the second part of a back-to-back. back, and the Grizzlies are always tough. That's kind of like you got a math test that you're kind of prepared for, but it's going to be tough anyway. Indiana on Saturday is recess, and the Clippers in LA on Monday is like getting sent to the principal's office. So, I mean, you've got three games that are legitimately tough and one that you probably should figure that you can win. So basically what you got to try to do is win one of those other three tough challenges.
That handful of games sounds like a terrible day at school.
It is a bad day at school. Then you got to come home from Oklahoma City, which is like you get to come home for the weekend, but your dad tells you got to help him paint the house. And then you go
took
out
away your cell phone.
Yeah, exactly. Then you got to go out to Denver on the 15th, which is Denver should be beatable. The Blazers always struggle with them. Then there's Golden State, which just, okay, flush that down the, you know, you're getting a swirly there. And then Sacramento, which is, okay, that's behind the school, underneath the stairs or, you know, whatever. That's the party in the playground. Other than Boogie, but Boogie is cool to hang with. So even if you have a bad time, you'll have a good time there. And they should win that Sacramento game. That's the first game that I'm pointing at where I'm saying, oh yeah, that's going to be fun. Other than that, none of this is going to be that great.
So when you look at, and this is what I was getting back to when I said January to make my point here before that the Blazers really get on a run.
You said February, didn't you?
I said January into February. That's when the schedule gets better.
Into February. Got it. Okay. Good. So you can claim you were right either way.
I do these things on purpose.
I got it. They're going to win January into March. They're going to win 6 of 8.
Just somewhere in there.
Somewhere just, spring. Just, in the spring. Yeah. Okay.
Just
anyway,
somewhere
go ahead. Sorry.
In that range. Yeah. But as you can see, as you just illustrated, this is not going to be an easy going for Portland. And it could be telling. And I know a lot of people want to sit here. Well, the new year, the Blazers were 17-24 last year. But do you really want to dig that hole and try to find yourself out again?
Yeah, exactly. And what did they end up with? 44 wins. I thought that wasn't the goal this year, right? It's supposed to be 53 or whatever Olshay said at the beginning, you know. And even in January doesn't start that well. You got to go to Minnesota, which is not the toughest thing in the world, but then you got Golden State, you got the Lakers who are playing a lot better, you got Detroit who's dangerous.
Detroit's playing really well right now.
Yeah, you got them at home, so you'd expect to win it, but still. Then you go back against the Lakers, then you got Cleveland, Orlando, but Washington. Yeah. Washington is after that. You're on the road, and it's only in the middle of that four-game road trip that you get any kind of, I mean, Charlotte and Philadelphia back-to-back, but then you got Boston, the Lakers again, Memphis, Golden State. So it doesn't really, really free up, like, for a long time, forever. I mean, you're almost into March before you see even a couple weeks where you go, the Blazers can win most of these for sure.
It's nice to have that cushion on the back end, but it's one of those things where if this success they've built upon over the last couple of games doesn't carry them through some pretty difficult times on this, at least scheduling wise, the narrative for the season could turn on its head very quickly.
Yeah, and of course, as we said since the beginning, that's the problem. Hopefully that won't happen. But look, again, we've said this on and off for years. There's a difference between pretty good and really good. And remember when the Blazers were really good, they would look at the schedule and go, win, 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 ha, win, win. Maybe a loss there, but who cares? Because win, win, win. There's nowhere, I mean, even if we're being honest, even in the spring, there's nowhere where you go, win, 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 win. I mean, you go win, win, tough, tough, hopefully win. You assume they're gonna get that streak at some point, but you don't know where, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think that's something to really to keep your eye on, even more so than some of the bigger trends this season, is how Portland can respond to how this schedule plays out.
Yeah, and really, whether they can take the schedule in hand or whether they get played by the schedule. And the difference between those is going to be exactly these games against, say, Memphis, or these games tight in a stretch against the Lakers, both of whom are really beatable, but neither of which can be assumed. And if you look at them and you say, look, we're going to grit our teeth, we're going to do our reps here, and we're going to take these games, and they do it, they will be in really good shape. But if they just kind of, you know, slide through and I won one and I lost one and that's pretty good, that one and lost one is going to keep up throughout most of the season, and you're not going to see a lot of improvement.
Yeah, I don't think I could agree anymore. Dave, you have any final words here?
Yeah, no.
Just want to remind everybody that we do have Blazers Edge Night, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. March 9th. Look for the post about that. We're going to put a new one up as we enter into Christmas time. So look, obviously we're buying gifts for everyone. If you could find your way to spend $9, $18, $20 to send a kid or two to see the Sixers on March 9th, that would be wonderful. You can find that on our website. If people are giving you gifts and you're going, oh my gosh, I so don't want gifts this year. I've got everything I need. I don't need another ugly sweater. You might say, hey, could you, in my name, buy a ticket or two? And that would be fantastic. The beautiful thing about this is like $20, which try to get out of even Walmart spending $20 on Christmas gifts. You cannot do it. $20 makes a huge difference. That's pretty much two tickets. And that's a pair of kids who get an experience that they wouldn't get without you.
And speaking from my own personal experience here, going through it for the first time and seeing and talking and meeting with these people, it's such a unbelievable experience for anybody who's ever taken a kid to a game for the first time or been around a kid for the first time. Amplify that by literally 1,000. And that's what's going on. So if there's any way that any of you have a chance to give, please do think about it. It's an unbelievable experience. And if you can make it out to the game and just kind of see what goes on, I'd highly recommend that as well.
It's a great way of thinking about it, Dan, because I think all of us have taken a kid to the game, or most of us at some point, nephews, nieces, children, our own children, whatever. If you buy a ticket, you took 2,000 kids to that game. You are part of that. And where else can you be a part of that where there's tangible? I mean, it happens. It's not speculative. You're not putting money on maybe if your side wins, this donation will work out, or, you know, all the other things. This is one thing that's for sure, that when you do this, you are making 2,000 people happy and transforming their evenings, and in some cases their weeks, their months, their years, their life. So that it's a big deal, and we love that it is so easy and inexpensive to make that kind of big difference.
And for one final note, for those who want to try to picture this, 2,000 kids in the Mona Center, that's 10% of the Mona Center filled with kids going to a game.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. It's scary. I mean, my gosh. Yeah. And if there's any kind of Blazer surge, it just goes crazy. And my favorite part, I think I've said this before, like when they have free pizza or shoot t-shirts or do the dance cam or whatever it is in those sections. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. You've never seen it. Like the entire section goes crazy. I mean, it's everything that a Blazer game should be, cranked up to 11, basically.
It's Blazer game wholesomeness at its finest. So with that, just a reminder, the Blazers Edge Night is coming up. Think about it going forward. For Dave Deckard, I'm Dan Morang. Thank you for listening to the Blazers Edge podcast. Remember, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere else for your podcast needs. And as always, go Blazers!